good afternoon, everyone. Lot to talk about today, as usual. A lot going on with our President of the United States and our federal government and our Congress. You know, we can't forget Congress here because we have a budget deal. Paul Ryan got together with the Senator Murray from Washington, and they came up with a budget deal, and they're touting it as something fantastic. You know, when you look at it, yes, it's good that they finally were able to compromise in Congress and work together. That's what people are going to probably see first. The trouble is the Republicans gave away the farm, as usual. The budget deal, while it's touted by Paul Ryan as being something that cuts the deficit, it doesn't. It doesn't cut the deficit at all. It doesn't really cut sequestration spending or cuts to the military. And that was one of the things that supposedly the Republicans were going to fight for, was protecting our military, protecting our men and women in uniform who are losing benefits, losing pay, going to get pay cuts. We're going to cut our military to the bone. We're going to have an Army and a Navy and a Marine Corps and an Air Force that are basically unable to defend the Constitution of the United States, much less do anything around the world to defend us. Supposedly, some of those sequestration cuts have been taken away, but Obama's just going to ignore it. He wants to do away with the military. He wants to destroy our military. He's doing everything he can to get that accomplished. So whatever has been done by Congress here is not going to restrain Obama. And the spending continues to rise. They approved $1 trillion in government spending. It's a two-year deal, supposedly. And it doesn't do anything to reduce the deficit. It doesn't do anything to create jobs. It doesn't do anything, they say we're not increasing taxes, supposedly. But instead of taxes, they're putting in things like user fees that are going to be increased on various people and businesses. And I was talking to a small business owner yesterday. He's being audited by the IRS. And this is something very interesting. The IRS has been doing this for years, but now it seems to be accelerating. They are targeting small businesses. They don't go after the big boys. They don't audit General Motors. They don't audit the major corporations because they have this big staff of attorneys that can tie the IRS up in knots. They go after small businesses, and they always assume that these owners of small businesses are lying, cheating on their taxes. In the case yesterday, this small business owner was told that he had to allow the Internal Revenue Service to come to his home and to examine his books and to provide all of his records. Well, that's nonsense. The IRS wants to audit you. They send you a letter, and they tell you that you need to make an appointment to come in and see them. They don't come invade your privacy at your home. Well, this business owner refused to do that. He got an accountant involved. He got an attorney involved, and they went to visit the IRS because they'd done nothing. They had hidden nothing. They had not cheated the IRS, but small business owners are going to be targeted. And in many cases, the IRS will find something. Even if they have to make it up, they will find something to go after small business owners. The idea is not just to collect more taxes. The idea is to put small business owners out of business. Putting more user fees through this budget deal on small businesses is not going to help the situation any. We have a runaway government as it is. We have a runaway spending, runaway taxation. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. And people wonder why businesses are going offshore and leaving the United States. is very simple. Why pay these inordinate taxes to the federal government when all you're going to get in return is basically harassment by the federal government? So the budget deal, as I see it, and I notice that Senator Marco Rubio has already come out and opposed it, the budget deal, as I see it, is a disaster. They want to avert another shutdown in the federal government. Well, that's commendable. By the same token, the shutdown that occurred recently, the only thing that was really impacted was veterans, World War II veterans, being able to visit the World War II Memorial, which is an open-air memorial in Washington, D.C. There was no reason to close it off, to barricade World War II veterans or anybody from going in there and seeing that memorial. This was something that was done by Obama in spite, and something to hurt the American people, because that's what he likes to do, is he likes to hurt the American people. He likes to do anything he can to damage us, to damage our economy, to break our morale. And when I say morale, I'm not talking about just morale in the military. I'm talking about the morale of the American people. More and more, as I make speeches around the country, I'm hearing people that are basically about to give up or have given up. They don't think there's anything we can do. They think Obama has control, with the liberal Democrats have control, and that we are going to lose our country. We cannot accept that. We can't just roll over and let the progressives, the liberals, the communists, the socialists, whatever they want to call themselves, I don't care anymore. The fact of the matter is that they want to destroy our Constitution, destroy our government, destroy our way of life, and they're making great strides in doing so. And the Republicans in Congress don't seem to be able to stop it. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in the House of Representatives, but I suspect this is going to pass, and it will certainly pass the Senate. So the new budget will go into effect, and yes, the government will not be shut down, which in my view is not necessarily a good thing. But the fact of the matter is that nothing has been done to cure the basic problem in this country, and that is a federal government that is out of control, is spending way too much money, is collecting way too much in taxes, is destroying small businesses, is damaging the morale of the American people, is taking away our rights. The budget agreement just allows the federal government to continue doing what it's doing now. We're putting our children at risk, our grandchildren at risk, because they're going to have to pay this debt. And we have a debt now over $17 billion. Or approaching $17 billion. I don't check the debt clock every day, but it's going to be over $20 billion within a couple of years, or $20 trillion, I should say. $20 trillion. We don't have the money to pay that. We will never have the money to pay that. Around the world, the dollar is in trouble. Countries are talking about going to another form of currency as a main currency for the world because the dollar's in trouble. Our spending power, I don't know, you know, I went to the grocery store yesterday, and every time I go, the prices on everything I buy seem to be increasing. A can of tuna, which they used to buy for 55 cents, is now 78 cents. Milk has gone up. Eggs have gone up. All forms of produce have gone up. We have inflation. And we now have a situation where the federal government is going to actually be pushing for inflation, to try to keep the economy going. Keep it afloat. You know, the stock market is being artificially inflated by the Fed pushing money into the stock market, spending millions of dollars a month, billions of dollars, actually, a month, to keep the stock market high, to make Obama look good. That's causing inflation. That's hurting the American consumers. And that's going to continue to cause inflation and continue to hurt the consumers. And once they stop doing it, or once they, even if they don't stop doing it, eventually everything's going to crash. The stock market is going to crash. The economy is going to collapse. The dollar is going to be virtually worthless. Inflation is going to reach the point where people can't afford to buy anything. And, of course, we have the liberals calling for, well, we'll solve that problem. We'll just increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour. You increase the minimum wage, and you're going to run a lot of small businesses out of business, or at the very least, they're going to have to cut their number of employees. They're going to be laying off people. Kids who want summer jobs are not going to be able to get them because their employers are not going to want to pay $15 an hour for a part-time summer worker. They can't afford it. But that's the response of the left, is increase the minimum wage, force businesses to pay more to employees, which is just going to result in less employees, in more unemployment. Many small businesses, as I said, probably going out of business. And it's going to be an absolute disaster for the American people. It's going to be an absolute disaster for the economy. We cannot continue down the path we're on. Yet the budget deal keeps us on that path. And it's time for our first break.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
So we have a budget deal, and that's the latest disaster coming out of Washington. Of course, the major disaster continues to be Obamacare. And what can you say about Obamacare? I mean, I was watching the news earlier today, and they're talking about over 800,000 people have enrolled in Medicaid. 800,000 people on Medicaid now. That's going to cost the states a lot of money. It's going to cost the federal government initially a lot of money. Because this is free. This is free medical care. And I don't have a problem with Medicaid for those people who have to have it, who need it because they are disabled or have lost their jobs and can't get a job and can't get health insurance. But now we have millions of people, it looks like, are going to be enrolling in Medicaid. A lot of them, I suspect, are illegals. They were talking this morning about, well, a lot of these people are immigrants or Latinos, and we don't know if they're illegals or not, but they're going to be enrolling in Medicaid. That's taxpayer-funded. At the same time, while over 800,000 have enrolled in Medicaid, only 300-something thousand have actually enrolled in Obamacare, or at least applied to be enrolled in Obamacare. We don't know at this point if anybody's actually enrolled, because the website doesn't tell you if you're actually enrolled. There doesn't seem to be any confirmation. Insurance companies are complaining that they're getting duplicate applications, or they're getting applications that are incomplete, or they're getting applications that they don't meet the requirements of Obamacare. They don't know what to do with them. So we don't know how many people have actually enrolled. But the goal was 7 million by March the 1st. And the idea was that in order to fund Obamacare, the younger people would be having to enroll. Because we don't know how many of these people that enrolled are elderly or how many are younger. But it appears, from what the indications are, that most of them are people who are elderly or sick, who are going to need extensive medical care and are going to be applying for this insurance. The only way to pay for that is for the younger people to enroll, the people who are healthy, the people who may not want insurance. Then they're going to have to pay high premiums. And let's face it, I have seen nothing to indicate that the cost of health care premiums is going down under Obamacare. This was one of the president's promises, that your cost of your health care insurance was going to decrease. The cost of health care in general was going to increase. And all these jobs are going to be created. And you could keep your doctor. You could keep your insurance if you liked it. None of that is true. The cost of premiums is skyrocketing, particularly for the younger people. Now, under Obamacare, up to age 26, the person can stay on their parents' policy. So that means the people over 26 to say 35 or 40, they have to enroll at a tremendous rate, and they have to be willing to pay these higher premiums in order for Obamacare to work. But it's not going to work, because the young people are not going to do it. They will pay the tax, which is what the Supreme Court says it is. They will pay the penalty. Because how does the penalty work? Well, you get penalized, and it's a relatively small amount of money, and they can't collect it anyway. The IRS, which is now in charge of all this, can't come and put a lien on your property. They can't seize your bank account. They can't do anything to collect it except withhold your tax refund, if you have one. If you don't have a tax refund coming, they can't get any of it. So young people, instead of paying a couple of $1,000 a month for insurance that they don't think they need, and by the way, how ridiculous is it that if you're a young male, you have to pay for insurance that includes maternity benefits for yourself and free contraception services? You don't need that, obviously, but you're going to be paying for it. So young men are going to look at this and go, this is absurd. I'm not going to do this. So they're not going to enroll. And Obamacare is going to crumble on its own accord. Well, I've seen this coming from the beginning. In 2009, when I wrote my original article on House Bill 3200, which I'd read all 1,100 pages, something that most members of Congress never did. Of course, the final version was 2,700 pages long. But I looked at the original version, and I said, this is unconstitutional. But I also wrote in that article, this is not about health care. This is about control. It's about the federal government taking control of our lives. It's about the Congress of the United States granting enormous powers to the President of the United States, which the Congress had no right to grant in the first place. Because I still defy anybody to find anything in the Constitution that allows the federal government to control health care the way they're doing it now. It just isn't in there. It was never envisioned by the Congress. It was never envisioned by the Founding Fathers. Now all of a sudden it's been done. But again, this is about control. Now, the original version of the bill set up a single-pay system, essentially, that was going to go into effect. The federal government was going to be in complete control of health care. They were going to decide who got health care and who didn't, what quality of health care you got, set up basically death panels, which had been set up anyway under the version in the past, to set up death panels, and everything was going to be handled by the federal government. In other words, socialized medicine, the same thing they have in Great Britain, which has been a total disaster. If you're in Great Britain and you need to go see a doctor, you may wait months or even a year until you can get in, get an appointment to see a doctor. Once you see a doctor, if they think something might be seriously wrong with you and they need to do diagnostic testing to find out if you've got cancer or heart problems, something like that, it may take months more before you get the diagnostic testing done. All of this was envisioned by the original health care bill. Now, there was such an outcry by the American people against the whole idea of Obamacare, and particularly against the single pay idea, that that was taken out of the law. But that is still the goal of the Obama administration, still the goal of the liberals in Congress. So I claim, and I think I'm right on this, that Obamacare was finally, the final version, was designed to fail, designed to be a disaster, designed to not work, so that Obama can then come in. And, you know, they plan on winning the Congress entirely in 2014. They plan on stealing the election and getting back the House of Representatives and controlling the Senate. So Obama can then come in and say, look, this is not working. It's all the Republicans' fault, or it's all George Bush's fault, or it's all God's fault, you know, whatever he may, whoever he'll throw it on this time. So what we need to do is we just need to simplify everything for the American people, for the good of the American people. We need to socialize, set up socialized medicine, abolish Obamacare, abolish the insurance companies, and take complete control over all the hospitals and all the doctors in the country, and complete control over America's health care. If he doesn't get control, they don't get control of Congress in 2014, he'll probably still do this by executive order. I mean, more and more, Obama has shown his contempt for the Constitution, his contempt for Congress, his contempt for the American people. More and more, he's simply saying, I'm the dictator. I am the supreme ruler. I am the Ayatollah. I will do what I want. Congress and the courts be damned. This is the Obama that we're looking at. This is the health care system we're looking at. This whole thing is going to be an ultimate disaster. But it's not going to lead to us going back to a free market system of health care, with the states regulating insurance companies, the states regulating medical care to the point where basically they license doctors and other health care professionals. That's not what Obama is going to let happen. That's not what the liberals are going to let happen. It's going to go one step further into socialized medicine. And the population of this country is going to be suffering because of that. And suffering greatly. 70% of the doctors in California have said they're not going to participate in Obamacare. They're not going to accept the exchange plans. They're not going to accept that insurance. What's that going to do to people who supposedly will be able to keep their doctor? They'll be lucky now to find a doctor at all. Many doctors are retiring early. What happens in the small towns where there are only a couple of doctors? And they either refuse to accept the Obamacare plan or they decide to retire early. Where do people go then for health care? How far do they have to drive to get care? All of this is the serious stuff that we're looking at. Even some of the national mainstream media is starting to see it. Although I saw on MSN this morning, you know, Obamacare enrollment surges. It's not surging. We don't even know what the accurate figures are at this point. But even if there is increased enrollment, I'm sure there is, because they've got some of the glitches in the website fixed, although they still don't know how they're going to pay the insurance companies the subsidies that they're supposed to be paying them. So you've got this runaway train, and it's going to ultimately lead to socialized medicine in this country if the left has its way. That's what they want. That's what the plan was designed for. That's what they're touting. That's what they're pushing for. We have to win the elections in 2014. We have to take control of the Senate. We have to maintain control of the House. And it would be nice if we could get two-thirds in both houses, or at least two-thirds in the Senate, and that way we could impeach Obama and get rid of this man who is such a disaster. But the elections are extremely important. The fact of the matter is, it's going to be very difficult. Time for our second break now.
Hi, everybody. It's Don Zabkar, your host for Who Knew? We air Mondays 2 to 3 on America's Web Radio, and then occasionally throughout the week. We've got some great subjects. This administration, or this regime, as you know, is providing us with great material. So stay tuned. Check us out. America's Web Radio, it's Who Knew? With Don Zabkar.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Talking about the elections, you know, coming up, we have something that, you know, concerns me greatly, and that is we have the federal government appearing to be putting in place even more things that are going to allow them to steal the election. Now, what happened in 2012? Well, you had a number of factors that caused the election to be, the presidential election to be lost by the Republicans. Number one, we had what I consider a weak candidate who did not go after Obama on things he should have gone after him on, things like Benghazi and the cover-up there. So we had basically a weak candidate, and then we had a massive cover-up by the government of things like unemployment. They fudged the figures. They made it look like unemployment just before the election was actually dropping, when in fact it was increasing. We had the lies told about Benghazi. We had the cover-up of things like the IRS scandal, which, you know, didn't break until actually after the election because they were covering all that stuff up. And we had the federal government going after the Tea Party groups, going after the groups that would wanting to be out there, getting their message out on various issues, and running ads on television, on radio, and basically campaigning for us to have a constitutional form of government again. These people were thwarted by the IRS because they couldn't get their tax exemption, and they were being intimidated. The IRS was demanding a contributors list, and the IRS was demanding that all kinds of questions, personal information be divulged by the individuals who ran these organizations. In the case of True the Vote out of Houston, Texas, for example, the people that run that organization, they were personally audited by the IRS. IRS visited their business three different times, demanding information. It was total harassment. So as a result, and this started before the 2010 election, as a result, there was a lot of activity that did not occur from people pushing and organizations pushing for constitutional government that did not occur during the 2010 and 2012 election cycle. Then in 2012, you had the constant harassment, harassment's not the right word, but you had the effort to deny our military men and women the right to cast their ballots. Because there had been problems with men and women, particularly overseas, in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other overseas bases, not getting their ballots on time. They'd get them just before the election. By the time they had them filled out and tried to get them sent back, they didn't arrive in time to be counted. To stop this, Congress passed a law that said that the secretaries of state have to send out the ballots at least 30 days before the election. They have to make sure they go out to all the men and women who are registered to vote in that state that are in the military. At a meeting, and this occurred before the 2010 election, at a meeting in Washington, D.C., of all the secretaries of state, Eric Holder and his Justice Department quietly informed all these people that they didn't have to do that, that there would be no sanctions by the federal government. There would be no lawsuits filed to force them to do it, that they could just quietly ignore this. And this information was particularly given to the blue states, states like Ohio and New York and Connecticut and Wisconsin. You don't have to do this. Don't worry about it. So they didn't. In a lot of cases, our military people did not get their ballots on time. The same thing occurred in 2012. There's an estimate that 100,000 members of the military from Ohio never had their votes counted. Similar numbers in other states. Would it have affected the outcome of the election? Maybe not the presidential election. But then again, maybe it would have. But it certainly could have affected elections for the Senate, or elections for governor, or for elections for the House of Representatives, or for state offices. That certainly could have been the case. We'll never know. And then lastly, but certainly not least, you have Eric Holder and the Department of Justice continuing to go after states like here in Texas, where a voter ID is required in order to vote. You have to have some type of picture ID, which you can get for free from the state. It's no problem to get one, but you have to have one to prove that you are the person who is registered to vote. And the reason for this is to stop the illegals from voting, to stop dead people from voting, although Well, that's something else the states are being told they don't have to do, which the federal government supposedly requires. They require, the federal law requires that on a regular basis, states have to purge their voter registration rolls of people who are known to be deceased. There are something like 50,000 still registered in Florida to vote, people that are deceased. Of course, the Democrats, dead Democrats have been voting for years. Or dead people who weren't Democrats, or all of a sudden started voting for Democrat, voting Democratic after they died. So this has been going on for years. But Eric Holder has told the states, don't worry about purging the voters who are dead. So Texas wants people to vote who are citizens of the United States, citizens of the state of Texas, and who are legally qualified to vote. Eric Holder has attacked us, attacked South Carolina, attacked Alabama, attacked every state that has put in this type of provision. Despite the fact that the United States Supreme Court has ruled that the states have a right to do this. So this is another example of the Obama administration deciding to ignore the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, on top of this, and I haven't had a chance to read all these yet, but I'm going to, we have apparently hundreds of pages of proposed regulations proposed by the IRS. Now, the IRS supposedly has told the American people that they're sorry for what they've done to the nonprofits, the conservative and Christian nonprofit groups, and it wouldn't happen again. They lied. Remember, nobody's been fired from the IRS for this. Nobody's been lost, gone on leave without pay. Nobody's lost any money. Nobody's been punished in any way, shape, or form by the Obama administration. So what the IRS has done now is they have come out with a set of rules and regulations which are open for public comment, and then we put into effect early next year, that basically target conservative political groups, conservative nonprofits, and despite what the Supreme Court said about you can't take away the free speech rights of corporations to engage in political activities. The Supreme Court said you can't do that. Specifically, Obama, of course, attacked that law and has continued to attack it verbally. Now they're attacking it for real. These rules and regulations are going to put on the nonprofits, the conservative and Christian nonprofits, basically stop them from engaging in any activity at all involving freedom of speech. They cannot run ads within 30 days of an election. They cannot run ads opposing gun control, opposing abortion, opposing deficit spending. They can't run ads for the Constitution. Anything deemed political by the IRS, and people could actually go to jail for it. This is going to be designed, is designed, to stop free speech in its tracks, to help Obama and the left steal the election in 2014. Their goal is simple. Maintain control of the Senate. Because then under Harry Reid's nuclear option, they only need 51 votes to approve Obama appointments. Maintain maintain control of the Senate and regain control of the House. And then Obama can do what he wants and will be allowed to do what he wants. He will be the emperor. We will be like Rome. Rome had a Senate also. The Senate that finally gave away its powers to an emperor and allowed itself to stop being a republic and to become a dictatorship. That's what Obama has planned. And if they steal the 2014 election, I don't think that we will ever have another free election in this country. And I'm dead serious about that. Or if we do have another election, well, like I said, not a free election, we may have Obama decide to run for a third term in 2016, even though the Constitution forbids that. Who's going to do anything about it? If Obama gets to appoint a couple of justices in the Supreme Court, the courts aren't going to stop him. If they control Congress, the Congress is going to stop him. He can just announce, I'm standing for re-election. We'd have an election like they used to have in the Soviet Union, where there's only one candidate. And what you do is you get a paper ballot, and you have to check on it, yes or no, for that candidate. But here was the way it worked. Before you could put your ballot in the ballot box, you had to show it to a guard, an armed guard, a member of the military. And if you check no, you're arrested. You probably disappeared in the gulag forever. So this is what we have that we're facing. And then, now we'll take our final break.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on americaswebradio.com.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
So, needless to say, I'm very concerned about our future here. And, you know, the attacks by Obama and his administration, the attacks on the Second Amendment, the attacks on the First Amendment, the political correctness, which is just running amok. I mean, where is common sense anymore? Did you hear about the six-year-old boy who was suspended from school for kissing his little girlfriend on her hand in class? Now, that would be laughable, except for the fact that in the record of this child, and this is part of his permanent school record, it is said that he was suspended for sexual harassment. Where is common sense? It doesn't exist anymore among the left, among the liberals, among the National Education Association. That is not sexual harassment. Six-year-olds are not capable of sexual harassment, of forming the intent. Yet, this child has something that on his record that could affect his future admissions to schools, even to college, even affect his employment down the road, because some idiot in a school has decided that kissing a little girl on the hand is sexual harassment. And, of course, it's being taken even further. as far as political correctness goes, in our military. I'm very, very, very upset about what's happening in our military. We have essentially an all-out assault by the Pentagon under orders from the Obama administration, and he's purging the military. He's purging the senior officers of the military who are loyal to their oath of office, the same oath I took, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. He's purging them. He's replacing them with people who will do what he says. And one of the things he's saying to do is purge the Christians in the military. Purge Christianity from the military. The Air Force is a prime example. The Air Force has gone totally amok, totally politically correct as far as they're concerned. When you take an oath of office at the Air Force Academy, to enter the academy, you no longer have to take the oath under God. That has been removed. The Air Force Academy has set up a pagan worship site for witches, basically. I don't know how many witches they're recruiting into the Air Force or are qualified to go to the Air Force Academy, but apparently there was at least one. So they set this up. You have a group out there of atheists that is actively campaigning to remove all remnants of Christianity from the military. One Air Force base has already caved and taken down a nativity scene on the base because this group said that some airmen on the base, unidentified, of course, were really upset by this, that it really concerned them, that it made them angry. It gave them PTSD. I mean, you know, all kinds of bad things were happening to these poor people because there was a nativity scene, some statues set up on the base to commemorate Christmas, which, by the way, despite the fact that they keep trying to remove it, that's what Christmas is all about, the birth of Christ. But the Air Force has caved in on this. Military chaplains are retiring in droves. Because basically, unless you're a Muslim chaplain, and then a Muslim chaplain, you're allowed to say and do whatever you want. But if you're a Christian chaplain, you cannot say in public that you oppose homosexual marriage or that you believe homosexuality is wrong. You cannot say that in your sermons. You cannot say that in public. You can't even say it in private, because if you're overheard, you will be disciplined. You cannot say anything bad about Islam, or you'll be disciplined. All-out assault on Christianity. Now, at the United States Justice Foundation, we're involved, not with the military yet, but that'll probably be coming, but we are involved with fighting the HHS mandate. And this is another example of what they're doing, using Obamacare as a tool. They're telling religious institutions and telling businesses owned by religious families that your beliefs do not matter. You have to provide free contraception services and morning after pills, which are essentially abortions, to your female employees. And you have to do this even though your religious beliefs oppose contraception and oppose abortion. Hobby Lobby is one of the cases, and the owners of Hobby Lobby, the family, have basically said if they lose this court case, they will shut down their businesses, and thousands of people around the country will be left unemployed. But they can't continue to do it. They cannot operate under the provisions put on them by Obamacare, by the federal government. They file suit, and they've actually won in the Court of Appeals. And their suit and another similar suit have both been consolidated and accepted for argument from the Supreme Court. Now, U.S. Justice Foundation filed amicus briefs, friend of the court briefs, in both of those cases. We will be doing the same in the Supreme Court. We will be filing a brief. So we're fighting to preserve the First Amendment right to freedom of religion, something that the left desperately wants to destroy, and something which they're actively working to destroy. If you go to usjf.net, you can keep up with what we're doing in the courts, because this is just one case we're involved in. There are a number of other cases around the country that we're working on. And usjf.net, you can find out what we're involved in, and you can keep up with the veteran situation, because that's the Second Amendment case we're working on. And we've got one lawsuit already against the VA pending, and we've got a second that we filed and are preparing to file. And the first suit, well, basically in a nutshell, for those of you that haven't heard the story before, veterans are getting letters saying that on the basis of information received by the VA, they are going to considering declaring a veteran incompetent to handle their own financial affairs. And they often don't say what information has been received or why. And then the letter goes on to say that once we declare you incompetent and appoint a fiduciary to handle your financial affairs, you can no longer own, purchase, possess, or transport a firearm or ammunition. If you do, you're guilty of a felony. Thousands of veterans have received this letter. 159,000 that we know of have been put on the list, the NICS list, which is a National Criminal Instant Background Check list, so they can't legally purchase firearms in this country. 99.9% of them, we suspect, do not belong on that list. Veterans are being put on that list for minor PTSD, for the fact that they may at some time have had depression issues, or even in some cases because they allow their spouses to handle the family financial affairs. The drive is to disarm American veterans. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Think about Adolf Hitler. Think about the way he worked when he was elected Chancellor of Germany. Adolf Hitler did several things. First thing he did when he wanted to consolidate his power was nationalize the health care system. By nationalizing the health care system, he felt like he could control access to health care and therefore control the people. The second thing he did was to disarm the German population, starting with the veterans, because your German veterans had taken the oath of office similar to what our military takes, that they would protect and defend the Constitution of Germany, protect the country, not protect an individual. They had no loyalty to the Chancellor of Germany. They had their loyalty to their country and to its freedom. Well, Hitler stopped that. He started with the veterans. So that's exactly what Obama's doing here. We have 21 million veterans out there. We all took that oath of office. We all, for the most part, still believe in it. And we are going to continue to believe in it. We're trained to fight. We're trained to fight for our Constitution. So we have to be disarmed in the eyes of the left. So they're coming after the veterans. We're getting horror stories from all over the place. What we're doing is like we file a suit against the VA because they refuse to respond to our Freedom of Information Act request. And we have gotten a little information after we filed the suit, but not everything yet. So we're still working on getting more information that's going to help us out on this. But in the meantime, if you're a veteran and you've received this letter or you just want to help out in this lawsuit, email me at usjf.net. And tell us your story, and I will get back to you, or my assistant will get back to you in short order to find out more information from you. It'll be a short questionnaire will be sent to you, and we'll put you on the list of people that we're trying to help here. Because what we plan on doing is filing a lawsuit to stop this. Now, this is serious enough that the United States Senate, twice there's been legislation introduced in the Senate to try to block this. And twice it has been defeated because Obama opposed it and the Democrats opposed it. So basically this lawsuit is the only hope the veterans have. It's going to cost between $250,000 and $500,000 to fund this lawsuit. We don't charge people anything for representing them, and we're certainly not going to charge the veterans and their families anything. All of this will be funded privately by private donations. We don't have any big donors, like Progressive Insurance gives them $1 million a year to the ACLU to help destroy the Constitution. We don't have any big donors giving us money to defend the Constitution. We rely on small donations from individuals. Go to usjf.net, go to the top of the page where it says donate to us, click that on, and you can find out how to donate using a credit card or how to donate by mail. And please help us out here. Now, we are working in a lot of different areas. And one of the things I've done and that we're doing is we have this little booklet on the Constitution that I've written called Our Constitution, where I take every article, every section, every amendment to the Constitution, print them as originally written, and then put in my comments about what they really mean. We are about to run out of our second printing. We've ordered a third printing. We've sold thousands and thousands of copies of this booklet. People are carrying them around in their pockets and their purses and handbags, and they're giving them out in schools. A large numbers are being given out in schools. So, you know, this is an important little booklet. You can go to www.constitution.jigsy.com, and you can order a copy of the booklet. And you can find out how you can order multiple copies at reduced rates. If you want to read my blog, and you can keep up with a lot of what we're doing at the USJF and my views on the Constitution by going to my blog at www.michaelconnelly.jigsy.com. And there you can read about what we're doing or what I'm doing or what I'm talking about. You can find out about my credentials, who I am. And you can look at the other books I've written. My book, The Mortarman, about my dad, Junior, during World War II, has become a bestseller as an e-book on Amazon. As of this morning, it was in the top 0.5% of sales out of 1 million books. And my novel, Amiyeli, A Story of America, is also doing very well on Amazon and other locations. You can buy them on Barnes & Noble. And then I've got several other books. Riders in the Sky, The Ghosts and Legends of Philmont Scout Ranch, which is very popular among scouts. And then my book, Amiyeli, America's Liveliest Ghost. So go to the website, go to usjf.net, donate to help us out. And I appreciate you listening in today, and I'll be talking to you again soon.
Watch